the Vice President of the United States.
Thank you very much, our good friend Bill, and my fellow members of AFTRA. I'd like to just make a few observations before I go into my well-prepared remarks along the lines of Senator Mansfield's pre-notice. I want to say that after seeing this gag reel tonight, I know what is meant by the other body. You're a little slow, boys. And then I would like to just observe that I'm mighty happy to appear before all of you in radio and television, to appear before you alive. I'd like to see what you tape and film cutters can do on me now. I know that our beloved friend, Senator Dirksen, was to be with us tonight, but really what you asked for was the minority leader, and in light of the polls relating to this administration, I'd just like to say I'm prepared to fill in. I would like to further comment that I too, Senator Mansfield, was asked to make a humorous 3 or 4 minute speech, and I said, that's the biggest joke of the evening. I can't even make one that isn't humorous in 3 or 4 minutes. As a matter of fact, I haven't even got around to saying hello. But I do want to thank you for the home movies. They're a good deal better than anything I've seen thus far on the networks. Now let me revert for a moment back to my friend, Senator Dirksen. I was going to say a word in his behalf, but I think I'll not. I do think that because he is not here, and I'm privileged to be yielded his time, that you all ought to lean back. The other evening, my dear friend Everett spoke at this Republican seance that they had here in Washington, and he mesmerized the customers for about 40 minutes. He's practically up to my standards now. But I've said a number of times about my office. And by the way, I want you to know that ever since the 25th Amendment has been passed, the Marine Band plays when I come in now. You can never tell when there'll be a coup in this town. Other vice presidents couldn't even get the D.C. police band up until then. But I told all you folks I was going to do something for this office. But I've said on other occasions, and all seriousness, that this nation needed some sense of continuity. And since their history records that John Adams said of the vice presidential office that it was nothing or everything, and it appears at this stage that the latter is not quite realized, since this country does need continuity, and since my dear and good friend Senator Dirksen is not here, and since Senator Hatfield has spoken, and Senator Mansfield has spoken, you can't make Humphrey feel no matter what you say, I think that I ought to offer myself tonight as a sacrifice to both parties. I'm available on either ticket, comes 1968. There's so much tension and so much division in our country. It seems to me we ought to have something or someone to unite around. And I've become accustomed to coming to these dinners. And I don't know whether you will ever get a vice president that'll want to come as much as I do. So now, let me just observe one or two other things, because I do have some very serious remarks here tonight. In the words of George Romney, I'm delighted to have this opportunism to speak to you tonight. I want to say for my friend George, he's a fair-minded Mr. Clean, whose slogan for 1968 is not a welfare state, but a state of opportunism for everyone. This is a time, as you know, for fun and games for our Republican friends. Romney said that Percy was an opportunist. Percy said Romney was a gentleman. Barry Goldwater said he was for Dick Nixon, and Dick Nixon said he was leaving the country. Now, I think that sort of takes care of the partisan situation for the evening. I'm very sorry Ev isn't here, because I wanted to indicate why he'd come out for the consular treaty. You may wonder what convinced him to do so. Well, there were some very high-level negotiations that were taking place. The Russians agreed to make the marigold the national flower of the Soviet Union. And Secretary Rusk assured Ev that he wouldn't permit a consulate in Peking, Illinois. And the Russians agreed to sell copies of Gallant Men in the Soviet Union. And the CBS will finally get there, I guess. I want to make one or two other observations here that I had in mind about the party. Bill Roberts has laid down the gauntlet tonight. He's mentioned that I've been given the mission of rebuilding the party in the presence of John Bailey. I don't think he should have done that. Or even in the presence of Larry O'Brien. I don't think he should have done that either. But in the words of Will Rogers, neither John Bailey or Larry O'Brien or Hubert Humphrey belong to any organized party. We're Democrats. And for the life of me, I can't imagine why all of these commentators worry about Democratic Party organization. We never have. What are you worrying about it for? But Bill, I want to say about my Democratic associates, compared to those Republicans, even with the list that you gave us, I want to say that compared to those Republicans, we give real meaning to those immortal words that are found in so many places, e pluribus unum, because we're a closely knit family. We're literally kissing and loving cousins. Compared to Reagan and Rockefeller, Javits and Thurman, Percy and Tower, Romney and Goldwater, Nixon and Kuchel. We really do hope that the boys do get along together for a little while. Tonight I want to talk about mergers. I hope that my friend who journeyed with me out to St. Louis is not here tonight from the Antitrust Division. But there are some things that we ought to talk about. I'm not sure that all of these mergers are really helpful. Some are and some aren't. Now, you take the CBS and the New York Yankees. I don't really know which happened to what or what happened to whom in that one. And then there was the NBC and the RCA. That's pretty good. Get a lot of citations. There's Time and Life and General Learning. And I want to tell my friends from Time and Life, considering what Keppel's been doing to General Learning, you all better look after your jobs. And then there is the Westinghouse and Betty Furness, or should I say the White House and Betty Furness. And then there's ABC and ITT, and I don't know why they want to get together. ITT already owns Avis. But possibly it hurts not to own ABC. Ladies and gentlemen, I thought tonight I ought to tell you of my relationships at the White House. Some of my friends have said, how are you getting along with the president? And I have always said, just exactly as the president wants me to get along with the president. But I don't believe that that's enough to convince people who are afflicted with this virus of the credibility gap. And I must quote Disraeli, who explained his success with Queen Victoria. And I want you to know tonight, whomever may be in this room that ever aspires to be vice president, this should be your code. And don't you ever, ever, ever even defect one inch. Disraeli said of his relationships with Queen Victoria and explaining his success, and this is the secret to the Johnson-Humphrey syndrome too. I never refuse. I never contradict. And I sometimes forget. All of that is so helpful. But in a moment like this, I do believe that a word of serious thought is well in line. We've heard from two very fine public servants, distinguished new United States Senator that honors his state and his office, and in my mind, one of the finest gentlemen that ever served in the Senate of the United States, the distinguished Majority Leader, Mike Mansfield. These are days of controversy and days of dissent and days of division. And needless to say, we worry about these divisions, and we are at times concerned even about dissent. But I would suggest that we remember the words of one who on other occasions has been at your dinners. Now departed, but a great spirit in our national life, never ever reaching the presidency, but always carrying with him the character and the nobility that would have graced any office. The man I refer to is Adlai Stevenson, who gave the definition of a free society. And he said, a free society is a society in which one is one where it is safe to be unpopular. In that succinct, concise phrase, the whole story of freedom is embodied. Because it is not always necessary to be popular, but it is very, very important to be free. I can't help but think what Thomas Jefferson said in his first inaugural, as I tried to think of tonight what I might say to you that would be worthy of your attention. Because you are the men and the women that convey the news and the programs of entertainment, and cultural life, information and education to the American people. The power of the radio, the power of television, is almost beyond our imagination. And the integrity of the man or the woman that operates or manages an outlet of radio or television is absolutely essential to a free society. But Jefferson recognized that there's always the possibility of human fallibility. And he said in his inaugural address, "The error of opinion may be tolerated where reason is left free to combat it." And whatever we may think of those that disagree with us, whatever may be the view of those in power as to those who challenge that power and the decisions of those in power, let it not be forgotten that where there is freedom of reason, or where reason is left free to combat any opinion, that freedom does prevail. I happen to be one that believes that there are no shortcuts to national security. I happen to believe that the struggle with tyranny is not a 100-yard dash, but rather an endurance race. And if there are no shortcuts to national security, then I think it can be said with equal definiteness and candor that there are only shortcuts to defeat. So my message to you tonight is to persevere. Persevere in respect for the right of dissent, and not to yield to the temptation to hush it. Persevere in the task that this nation sets for itself, and not to be deflected or diverted to less important duties. Persevere in the cause of freedom and its protection, and to remember that we are where we are, not because we were indecisive, not because we were weak, and not because we were without principle. We are where we are because we stood fast when it was needed. We stood firm when it was required. And we had great faith when the need was there to have that faith. I salute the radio and television correspondents, and I salute all of those associated with them in the United States of America. And I do it because I happen to believe that with whatever limitations or weaknesses we as human beings may exhibit from time to time, that as Winston Churchill said, democracy is the worst possible form of government except all others. And what we do with our weaknesses is still the best, regardless of all others. Thank you very much.